Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
A word of warning. This podcast explores graphic and disturbing stories and includes some strong language. It therefore may not be suitable for our young listeners or other folks who may find it disturbing.
Hello and welcome to True Crime Daily, the podcast covering high profile and under the radar cases from across the country every week. I am your host, Anna Garcia. We are recording this on Wednesday, January 19th, 2022. Today, we are joined by Danny Smith. Danny spent 21 years with the LA County Sheriff's Department, 7 years in the homicide unit. And now he is a private investigator, a consultant, a friend of the show, but above all, Danny has found a voice for himself as a rather prolific writer. Welcome back, Danny.
Thanks, Anna. I'm always grateful when I'm on here. Thank you.
Oh, we love to have you. And, you know, for those of you who follow this program, I met Danny on a murder case of a little girl. And we met years ago on Crime Watch Daily. So you never know where you're going to find people. The adventure continues in fighting for the rights of survivors. I know you're very close to the mother of that little girl who was murdered. And so I always appreciated that about you. Now, we're going to talk about your books a little later, but you've got a great headline. You're like, your book is doing great on Amazon.
Yeah, the last book that I published is a memoir. It's the first nonfiction that I've published. And I published it September 8th. And so here, almost 4 months later, it's still in the top 10 for law enforcement memoirs on Amazon. And it's doing great. Selling a lot of copies and people, a lot of great feedback. The reviews have been fabulous on it. So I'm very happy about that.
And it's called Nothing Left to Prove. And what's important about this, and we talked about this on another episode and it was at the end. So I kind of want to mention it at the top here because it says so much about you. You started writing because you were suffering from PTSD from the horrific crimes that you were covering and the violence that you were seeing. And your therapist said to you, start writing. And that led to this.
Yeah, it did. It took quite a few years before it actually all kind of came together. But that is how I got going in the direction of becoming an author, and never had any clue that's where my life would take me. But it's exciting, and I enjoy it. And the shrink was right. It's very therapeutic to write, and I'm sure a lot of people, have experienced that as well.
Well, thank you for always sharing that because so many listeners and viewers are always touched by you sharing that part of it and how important that is. And you're a sensitive human being. And we've got two cases today that, you know, they're going to infuriate you. They're going to make you mad. And then you're going to say there's just something wrong about this. And everything about today's cases are about attempts to fake deaths in order to get away with crimes. And sadly, one involves a child, okay? So here's what we're looking at. A Tennessee woman tells her son's school that her 12-year-old son has died as a result of a seizure. Teachers and friends begin raising money for the child's funeral arrangements. As you can imagine, the whole school rallied. And then the boy is found alive, abandoned in a motel room. He had been there for weeks, say police. Why did the mother lie? And why did she run out on her special needs child? It's heartbreaking, this story. Our other case is a man accused of sex crimes in several states dies from cancer in 2020. Or did he die? Now authorities say that he faked his death and is an international fugitive. He's just been apprehended in, of all places, Scotland, in a hospital where he had a near fatal case of COVID, was on a ventilator, and now they're working to extradite him back to the United States. This is one of those, you know, catch me if you can stories. It's just outrageous, Danny.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. And I don't know, from what I've been reading, I don't know if he's actually even healthy enough to be extradited yet. But he went there believing that he could not be extradited back to the United States for his crimes. But actually, there are certain laws that allow extradition. And, you know, it's just it was a he misunderstood how that works. Some things they won't extradite. Some things they won't extradite for. But this case, these cases, these rapes, they certainly will. So,
yeah, a lot of miscalculations on his part. So this is the case of Nicholas Rossi. He's also known as Nicholas Oliverdian, and he has multiple aliases, at least eight, according to one of the prosecutors in Utah who's been searching for this guy. Police say that he faked his death 2 years ago, and he made sure to post an obituary, an obituary to leave a story and legacy behind. How much of it is truthful? I have no idea yet. So Nicholas is wanted by multiple law enforcement agencies in the United States for financial and sex crimes. And internationally, he's wanted by Interpol, possibly for additional crimes in the UK. He was discovered at a Scottish hospital last month, registered under an assumed name. 34-year-old Nicholas, who sometimes goes by Rossi, told the hospital his name was Arthur Knight. I like that. Very English, Knight, right?
Yeah.
He was admitted into the hospital because he had a serious case of COVID, so serious, on a ventilator, and he almost really died for real this time. Okay. And this is actually, you know, prosecutors say he might have actually continued to live under the radar had he not almost died and checked into a hospital. That was his fatal, near fatal flaw, if you will, in his case. Investigators say that they're not going to reveal exactly how they knew what was going on, but my guess is, they said, Interpol said that there was a tip. My guess is, if you think that you're dying, you've been in hiding, and now you're scared that you're going to die, you want to start talking to all the people you love, who you may have not communicated with for your own personal safety. That's just my theory. What do you think, Danny?
Well, that's an interesting theory, and I didn't think of it like that. I was thinking that there's an anonymous tip from somebody, because, you know, it said that they figured out who he was, determined who he was through fingerprints and DNA, but clearly how they got to that point, how they decided that the man in the hospital is this fugitive, you know, that's a needle in a haystack type of a thing. There had to have been a tip.
Yes.
But Anna, you make a good point. Maybe he did contact someone. I don't know if he's on a ventilator. I doubt it, but maybe a text message or an email or something to somebody. But that's a fascinating part, in the fact that law enforcement won't reveal how it is that they ended up finding him there makes me think it's an anonymous tip, or not, maybe not anonymous, but somebody tipped them off.
Yeah.
That's my sense of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's being reported, that there was some kind of a tip. Now, when Interpol got this tip that they thought they had finally found this fugitive that they'd been looking for, they sent photos of the man who they thought he was, Nicholas Rossi, to the hospital. And then the staff in Glasgow took a look at the photos, and it's like, well, it sure looks like the guy. Then further confirmation was needed, where the authorities sent over fingerprint samples and DNA and asked for samples to be able to figure out, is this who we think he is? And we're pretty sure that it is. And it was, say authorities.
Right.
Okay, so the question is, who is this Nicholas, right? Like, why is he wanted? And why would he go to such lengths to fake his death and run away? So in 2008, Nicholas Rossi was convicted in Ohio on two sex-related charges, sexual imposition and public indecency. He reportedly confronted a woman, groped her, exposed himself in a stairwell at Sinclair Community College in Dayton, Ohio. Now, also in 2008, Rossi was accused of raping a 21-year-old woman in Utah. A rape kit was taken, Danny, but it sat there unprocessed. He was identified as the suspect, but the lead detective in this case decided to close the case without referring it to prosecutors. That is according to the Utah County Attorney General's office. That DNA evidence from 2008 was not entered into the national DNA database until 2017. And I will tell you, Danny, in my opinion, that in itself is a crime.
It is. When I read that, I looked for some other sources of information, but everything's consistent. And the bottom line is the detective, for whatever reason, just closed his file. He'd never presented the case to the prosecutors for consideration. It sounded like he had more than enough. Well, clearly he did, because they're now going to be charging him, or they have charged him with that rape. And like you said, they had the DNA evidence and he didn't do anything with it. So, that's just tragic and terrible. And, you know, there's no defense of that. It's obscene.
It is obscene. There is no defense of that. And sadly, this is an example of what is happening in every community, in every district, in which there are tons of rape kits that are sitting there not processed. It is a huge problem that law enforcement has been having to deal with, but no real solution has come of it yet. And this is one of those examples of why it is so serious an issue that it must be addressed and they need to be processed. So in 2017, his DNA from that kit gets entered into the database. The following year, in 2018, authorities in Utah determine his DNA is linked to the two sex cases from 2008, the one in Ohio and then the one in Utah. Nicholas Rossi is then charged with first degree rape in Utah in September of 2020. In addition to the sex assault charges, the FBI also had a warrant out for Nicholas, and still does, for allegedly defrauding his foster father. He allegedly took out credit cards in his name using his ID and ran up debts of as much as $200,000. Okay. So clearly, you got a lot of agencies looking for this guy, for multiple types of crimes. According to published reports, he's also accused or suspected of the following crimes, because it doesn't end there: harassment and possible kidnapping. He apparently has cases in Ohio, Utah, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island, where he apparently grew up and faked his death from cancer. Is this unbelievable?
Yeah, it really is. And the interesting thing, and I'm sure you're going to get there next, but he's not what people are going to imagine. He has this very public image, and he's involved in politics to a degree. He's involved in this movement to do something to help with the foster care system. And I don't know all the details of that, but he's involved in some things that you would think, oh, what a great guy. But he has these two lives that he lives. And I guess that's why he ultimately faked his death and fled the country, because, you know, it was catching up.
It was catching up. So you have all these warrants and charges from multiple states that he is facing. Now, we're going to move to Rhode Island, which is where he faked his death. What's interesting about who he was, Nicholas Rossi, if we're going to go with that name, had a very public life. He became very active, became an advocate for the rights of foster children and children in the welfare system, the child welfare system, to make sure that their rights were protected. He claimed that he had been sexually abused as a child. And as a result of his story, which he went public with, many people in Rhode Island found him a very sympathetic character, person, a person with a story. As a result of that, he had entree into the world of politics and was actually working for the legal reform of the system for the betterment of the children, for better laws to protect them. Okay, so Danny, as you said, we have two very radically different people, one who publicly is working to save children, the other one accused of sexually assaulting women.
Yeah, and I don't discount his story of his childhood and being a victim himself, because oftentimes that, you know, that's something that's found in predators that they themselves have been victims. So I mean, it's very likely that his story is true, and clearly he's passionate about that. But then he has this other side of him that is not only is he a criminal, but he's very devious and brazen. Truthfully.
And violent, very violent individual, yes. You know, allegedly very violent. The Providence Journal reports about his obituary, right? Because we're going to find some little nuggets in there. So that's dated February 29th of 2020. So what I'm thinking is, and what everyone's thinking is, that all the other cases are catching up with him. He's feeling the pressure and it's time to get out of town. And he's going to do that and say, going to fake my death. I'm going to get out of here and no one's ever going to bother me again. And I'll have a great life in Scotland. So in the obituary, it said that he died from non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So after he fakes his death, though, is when the authorities are like, now, wait a minute. We don't believe he's dead. If anything, it drew more attention to him in a way,
right.
But he had already disappeared. An unidentified woman, I want to know who this person is. An unidentified woman claiming to be his wife called and emailed several news outlets to announce his death. Okay. Because, you know, you almost want to like die and get out of town. Right. But no, not this guy. Nicholas had a lot of fanfare with his death.
Yeah.
And she told the news outlets he had been cremated and then his remains were buried at sea. All very dramatic, right? So that's it. Nicholas is gone. There's no body, nothing that can be done. So in January of 2021, investigators who were very suspicious that he had not died pressed the woman who was claiming to be the wife, the widow, for more information because things were not making sense. So she, under pressure, according to the Providence Journal, wrote a 5-page email. My guess is this thing is filled with information.
Right.
And okay, I'm going to quote from this because it just adds to this very strange case. So this is what she wrote. Quote, unless my husband was cloned and died in my arms and faked cancer diagnosis, treatment, heart disease, heart attacks for months. For months, the man had heart attacks before he passed away in my arms. It's a miracle he lived that long with a heart attack every day.
Right.
So nonetheless, when the reporters at the Journal said, you know what, can you just send us a copy of his death certificate? Strangely, she did not send the death certificate. Wouldn't that be to think about it, if you're going to fake your death, you're going to need a death certificate.
Right. Right.
Details, it's all in details. Okay, so then the reporters from the Providence Journal reach out to Nicholas's former attorney and they ask, like, you know, what do you think is going on? And his former attorney, Jeffrey Pine, says, do I think it's possible he's alive? Of course I do. I guess the attorney does not want to incriminate himself. Okay.
Right.
So that is the history, some of the history of Nicholas Rossi. Let us now go back to Scotland. Authorities set up a video link at the hospital, in the hospital room, so he could start the extradition proceedings to get him back to the United States to be so he can face the Utah charges, the one that right now is the top charge. And a police officer has been now posted outside of his hospital room. According to the Utah County Attorney, David Levitt, he told BBC Scotland, "We will now have to go through the process of proving in a Scottish court that Arthur Knight is actually Nicholas Rossi." So just because they have some matching fingerprints and DNA, there's a whole legal process that this guy has to go through and the prosecutors have to go through overseas before he is actually released. And that process is going to take some time. But the prosecutor here in the United States said, you know what? We're going to go through it and we don't care how long it takes because the victim in the Utah sexual assault has been waiting 13 years for her justice.
Right.
So there is the will without question in Utah to get this guy back. Now, the prosecutor did tell NBC News, he said, you know what? We probably would have never found this guy had he not gotten COVID and checked himself into a hospital.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, it'd be really interesting to find out how that information came about, because that's the big question. And that's the link that we're missing and probably the most interesting part of the whole story, truthfully.
Yeah, it is. It really is. The irony, the karma of a man who fakes his own death and then nearly dies of a real disease. And that is the reason that he is found really and apprehended. I mean, the irony, the karma there is amazing.
Yeah, karma is a good word for it, too. And, you know, you mentioned the victim waiting 13, 14 years almost probably by this point. But, you know, it's difficult enough to get the victims of rape to stay involved in the case. You know, it's a terrible thing that a victim has to go through when they prosecute a person who has raped them, because basically, essentially, they relive it and they have to relive it publicly. And in this case, it's going to be extremely public. You know, this is going to bring a lot of media attention. So, you know, God bless this poor lady. And I do hope that you know, they're able to get through this with her and that she can stay intact. And hopefully she has some counseling and a lot of good advising.
Yeah. So we're going to keep an eye on this one when Nicholas does arrive back in the United States to face the charges that he should absolutely be facing. So we will keep an eye on that one. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor. The new year is a great time to focus on what's most important to you, whether that's learning to cook, ordering less takeout, or prioritizing your wellness. HelloFresh is here to help with endless options to make cooking at home easy and enjoyable. HelloFresh offers the flexibility that you need to easily customize your order online or in the app. You can change your delivery date, your food preferences, and the plan size. You can even choose to skip a week whenever you need to. And in addition to the 50 menu and market items that they have, there's also dessert. Satisfy your sweet tooth with seasonal limited time goodies like Dunkaroos cookie dough or Vanilla Delight cheesecake. I thoroughly enjoyed my HelloFresh box. I have to tell you, I was so impressed with the produce. The onions were spectacular, and there were red and the yellow onions, plus the carrots. Unbelievable. So many carrots, I'm still eating the carrots. So go to HelloFresh.com/TCD16 and use code TCD16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. That's HelloFresh.com/TCD as in True Crime Daily 16. Don't forget to use that code TCD16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Our next case is from Clarksville, Tennessee, which is about an hour northwest of Nashville, and that's really not too far from the Kentucky border. That's where 39-year-old Vanessa Blanchard lives with her 12-year-old son, who has autism. She is accused of faking his death and then abandoning him for weeks in a motel. Vanessa's son attends a school for special needs, and he hadn't been in class for several days. This was back in October. So the school resource officer reached out to the mother, Vanessa, to find out Where is the boy? Is something happened? What's going on? Police say that the mother told the school officer that her son had died 2 days earlier on Wednesday, October 27th of 2021, that he had died from a seizure. According to multiple local news reports and the police, the boy's classmates and their parents were not only devastated by the news, they actually decided to start raising money for his funeral costs. Now, I think, you know, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more. You're dealing with a child who has special needs. He goes to a school with other children who have special needs. This news of his death, his sudden death, was so shocking and jarring to these children, some of whom have challenges in processing certain emotions and processing these kinds of traumatic events. So, so many parents expressed how hard it was for their children who were so fond of him to deal with their grief. So I want to make sure that, you know, this is a very serious situation, not just for the safety of that child, but also for the emotional safety of these children who were caught up in this crime of faking a death. They really were, and they were affected by this, which I think is, you know, just adds to the tragedy here. You know, our most vulnerable children. Thank God nobody did die. Nobody did die. So back to the case. The children and the teachers and the parents are raising money. And so they contact the local funeral home. You know, they want to see how much is all this going to cost? You know, what are our deadlines? And that's when the director at the funeral home told the, you know, these do-gooders in the community that there were so far no record of any arrangements. The arrangements hadn't been made yet. So then the organizers contacted the mother. And the mother said, oh, well, that's because my son's body is still at the hospital pending an autopsy examination. Okay, all right. You might buy that, right, Danny? Up to that point, right?
Well, I wouldn't, but I mean, a lot of people could, yeah.
Yeah, no, of course, you wouldn't believe anybody, but you know, if you're grief-stricken and you're trying to do the right thing and you're like, well, that makes sense. And you talk to the mom and the mom tells you that, like, you know, even if things are a little, you know, fuzzy when a mother is believed to be in mourning, they're not going to be their best, right? They may not be the most lucid, logical. That's what I would say.
Yeah, because I mean, who would do that? So to question whether or not, you know, her child really passed away, you'd have to start there saying, well, you just can't get past that. Like, no one would do that, right?
No, so, it's not a logical next step. It's like, well, he's not really dead. Of course not. Everybody's crying. Of course he's dead.
Yeah.
So at this point, the deputies at the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department are starting to think something's wrong here because a child has died in their community and they don't seem to have any record of the child dying. And there's this big community push, you know, to help the family. And they're like, but isn't that a little weird? Like, wouldn't we know if a child had died suddenly? And hold on a second. And, you know, doesn't take long, a couple of calls over to the coroner's office to find out there is no child. There is no record of his dying. So according to the arrest affidavit for the mother, on November 16th, so now he's been missing, what, several weeks, the school had issued the boy a laptop for, you know, for him to be able to do his work. Remember, so many kids have been doing remote work, but also to do homework and everything else. So they notice, hey, wait a minute. The laptop is active. Someone is using it. Like, who else would be using his laptop? I guess you could think, okay, well, maybe the mother is, right? Someone in the family. They traced the computer and they found that it was being used at the Vacation Motor Motel. Now, The Montgomery County Sheriff's Department is very, very sensitive on this issue. And I'm going to ask you, Danny, why. They want to make it absolutely clear that they didn't use the laptop to find his location, but they kind of did. I don't understand the, is there some kind of sensitivity because it's a school issued laptop and the authorities don't want people thinking that they're being kept track of? I mean, they're highly sensitive to this part of the narrative.
That would be my guess, Anna. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, it seems to me that the computer definitely is the link that brought them to that motel. But yeah, the only thing I can think of is as you mentioned, you know, they must be wanting to protect the school, or the school is really having a fit about this, not wanting information released. And the only reason for that would be just to have, you know, the other children and family feel secure in the fact that they've got these school computers and they're not being spied on, you know, which of course wouldn't be the case, but you know, it's clear that somehow that computer is what brought them to the motel where they found the boy.
Absolutely. I mean, they noticed it was on. It wasn't making any sense. They aren't being completely transparent about how they got from there to the motel. But I right. think we can all fill the dots in over there. So the sheriff's department says that the boy was located at the motel. He had been staying there by himself for weeks. Now, here's my question about this, which I haven't been able to get answered, and we may not, because a lot of times things are not revealed. So he's in the motel room by himself. The mother allegedly tells the police, well, I check in on him either every day or every other day.
Right.
Well, that's big of you, Mom. That's really big of you. Wow. Mother of the year, huh?
Yeah.
So a few things here. The motel, the people working at the motel had to have found this a little odd, right? At some point you're picking up on this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things that I wondered is what's going on with the staff there at the motel? Why, you know, this kid is obviously just staying in the room. I mean, you would think, I can't imagine that he's got a presence outside of the room. So there's housekeeping and so forth. It's a very, very odd thing that someone else hadn't called. And I did want to go back real quick, Anna. You mentioned the coroner's office and the mom saying that he was at the hospital waiting for an autopsy. And just, you know, to make it clear for the listeners, when a person dies, there is automatically a coroner's case issued, unless it's a natural death and there's a doctor assigned death certificate and so forth. But that's another subject. In this type of a case where a child died, there would be a coroner's case issued right away. And so as soon as the police looked into this, there's no doubt that that's how they started saying, okay, something's wrong. Let's dig into this.
Yeah, that definitely would have been priority number one in figuring out that there was obviously something wrong with her story. So right. I'm also trying to figure out, you know, I don't care how inexpensive a motel room is, it is still an expense. So 2 weeks in a motel is not cheap, no matter how cheap the motel is. So how was she paying for it? And, you know, I don't know. Motive is the one thing that the authorities have not at all touched on here. I have some suspicions.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone listening is nodding their head, and you know, we're all thinking the same things, and it's going to be, you know, primarily involving drugs, I would imagine, you know, because basically you have a mother that's abandoned the child, and supposedly she goes by and she checks on the child, and you know, Anna, and this might sound a little bit strange, but for me, I'm just thankful that the child is alive, because clearly this mother is someone who found herself in a situation where she didn't want the kid around. She was otherwise engaged in whatever she's engaged in, you know, and, you know, again, my suspicions would be that she's involved with drugs and a man or some men or whatever. But, you know, these are the types of cases that often end very tragically. So, I mean, at least the kid was in a motel and, at least relatively safe as far as that, not being a murder victim. So.
Yeah. It's interesting you said drugs. You know what I thought? My suspicion is, look, it's hard being a parent. Those of us who have gone through it understand there are very challenging times. Add to that either a child who is ill or a child who has special needs, and it can be very hard to take care of a child. And I was just wondering if maybe there was a part of her that was just like, I can't, you know? But it's
Yeah,
so
and if so,
weird.
that's tragic because I mean, there is a lot of help available for people, and I'm sure that at that special needs school that there's a lot of help available there. And as you know, through the some of the interviews of the parents of these other children, the boy was well thought of there. He had friends, and so that would be tragic if that's the case. And, I'm cynical. I my guess is that, she was probably involved in something, that basically he was in the way, and she wanted to live her life. So, I could be wrong, but that would be my guess. That's the first thing I would be looking at.
I wonder, you know, we talk about these cases where something horrible has happened within the family and you've got, you know, a child with special needs. We cover these crimes a lot because I feel very, very strongly about them. I feel very strongly about our most vulnerable in the world. And I wonder, is it possible that in some weird way that she actually may have kept him safe there? Is it possible, whether it was intentional or inadvertently, by keeping him at the motel, if you're right, Danny, and something horrible was going on in her life that maybe was very dangerous, is it possible in some weird way that she kept him safe there? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean that could be too, and that's kind of along the lines of what I'm saying. At least she had him there, and if you take her at her word, she went by and checked on him occasionally, which I would think, if nothing else, to provide food and water, she'd have to. So, I guess that's my whole point. This whole thing could have been much more tragic, and I guess that's a presumption I'm making. With my some of my ideas of what she might have been involved in, and I could be completely wrong on that, so I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out. I look forward to learning more about this case, and hopefully we will.
Yeah, we have a really, really vocal community on our YouTube channel. So I can't wait to hear all of your thoughts on this because so many of you have such incredible backgrounds and you look at things in ways and you start these discussions, which is what I love about this podcast. So I can't wait to hear what you all have to think about this case in particular. Now, Vanessa Blanchard was arrested last week on January 12th, 2022. She's been charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor and false impression of death. She's being held on $5,000 bond. And what we're all waiting to find out is, you know, why? I do want to add just a little bit more about the children in the class. They are now getting special counselors, grief counselors, who were originally, you know, sent there to help them grieve the sudden death of a child. Now those same counselors are now working with the children to process not only their grief, but their complete confusion. And here's the thing. If we can, there's never going to be an answer that you can give these children that's ever going to comfort them about what happened to this child. There's never, there's no one can process this.
No, because they're gonna it's they've been betrayed. And they've gone through this range of emotions, and one of the parents talked about that even after some of this had come to light, apparently a lot of the kids at school didn't know it. And the one parent goes into a game station or some type of a store, and there's the boy, and her son is his friend, he believes that the boy is dead. He still hadn't learned. This is before he learned that the boy wasn't dead. So that was a very traumatic thing in and of itself. I couldn't imagine. You know, how do you deal with that?
I mean, they even put a shrine on his desk and his seat in the classroom. Yeah. You know, I don't want to lose sight of how this tragedy has affected this entire community. It's really unbelievable. Now, the other thing is, we do not know where the boy is now, the 12-year-old boy, but the police say that he's in a safe location and they will not comment on his custody situation. So hopefully the whole town is really looking out for him wherever he is, because this is going to take a lot of healing.
Yeah, and also, you know, the crimes that she's charged with are misdemeanors. So it's not like she's going to be going to prison for what she's done. I would imagine she's going to lose custody of the child, but, you know, who knows? I don't know. It's a very, very strange and almost bizarre set of circumstances that you know, don't allow the authorities to charge her with actual child endangerment or anything along those lines. So there must be some facts that we're not aware of, where maybe she was actually caring for him the way she said she was, and she's just being charged with these two misdemeanor cases.
Yeah. Again, we're going to watch this one. It is time for our comments section. These are the crime stories you all are talking about. And our Owen Michael is here now. He watches, he reads, he's got his finger on the pulse of things. Hi, Owen.
Hello, Anna. Hello, Danny. I have a Florida story for you today.
Yay!
That two Florida women reportedly showed up at a man's residence around 3 a.m. last Monday, January 10th. Clearwater police said one of the women allegedly climbed over the balcony at his apartment, went inside and threw containers full of glitter at him. She then reportedly unlocked the front door to let her friend inside. Clearwater police report the women allegedly both tossed glitter canisters at the victim, hitting him in the head and the torso. On the way out, they reportedly threw more glitter around the apartment, and one of the suspects kicked out a window, according to police. Police reportedly traced a vehicle back to one of the women's homes about 2 miles away. They said the vehicle was still warm to the touch and had incriminating glitter inside of it when officers found it. The alleged perpetrators were charged with burglary with assault or battery and criminal mischief. There was no word on what prompted this alleged attack. Heather S. said, "I bet he looked nice afterwards."
Sparkly.
Ranesh H. said, "Just like those charges they have, that glitter is going to be with him for life." Glitter being notoriously difficult to remove.
Yes.
Jason W. said, "Having to clean all that up is the real crime." Corinne S. said, he was an exemplary victim, a shining star, if you will. Their future isn't looking too bright. It's like they've lost their sparkle somehow. Okay, I'm done, LOL. Corinne really went to town with that one. And Warren P. says, "Criminal mischief never felt like such an appropriate name for a charge."
I do love the use of the glitter, because I agree. Good luck, buddy, getting that glitter off of you, out of every crevice, everywhere in your house. What did he do to upset them?
What did he do?
So?
The mugshots of these two women, they are grinning broadly, and they don't seem to have a whole lot of remorse, but that's not for me to say. But yeah, kind of a ridiculous situation going on in Clearwater, Florida last week.
You know, you do not want to upset the artsy, crafty That's kind right. of craftsy people. Yeah, because they have weapons and tools in
and
their
they're creative.
They're very creative. Yes, they're creative with glitter and glue guns. You know what? The person should be thankful they didn't whip out the glue gun. That's what I'm saying about this one. Okay.
Yes, I'm sure this man is considering himself lucky in some ways, and I don't know, probably unlucky in others.
Yeah, I am not by any means condoning any kind of violent action with glitter. I'm just simply saying that if you have that much glitter, you have other tools in the arsenal.
That's right. We're just analyzing the situation here.
Yes. So glittery and sparkly. Danny, anything to toss in?
You know, I'm honestly sitting here telling myself, Danny, just shut up. Don't say a thing.
Yeah, probably good. All right, Owen. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys. See you next week.
See you, Owen.
So, Danny, where can people find your books? You not only have this book, which is more of a memoir than Nothing Left to Prove, but you also have a series of crime novels that you've written.
I do. I have seven novels that are published. I have the Dickie Floyd detective series. So people who like crime fiction, people who like Bosch, you know, Patterson Connolly, Elmore Leonard, they've enjoyed my books. I get a lot of people that say that, you know, my writing is on par with that, Wamba novels. So people like it. It's all available on Amazon and Danny R. Smith. I have a website, murdermemo.com or DickieFloydNovels.com, and I am all over social media.
Indeed, you are. You can find me at Anna G News. Sometimes I post about crime, usually about chihuahuas, sometimes about food, which brings us to our sponsor. We really want to thank HelloFresh for sponsoring our podcast. We appreciate it, and I very much appreciate the wonderful fresh food that they have sent me. You can find all our episodes wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to True Crime Daily, our YouTube channel. We've got nearly 5 million subscribers. You should be one of them. And also sign up to receive our newsletter at truecrimedaily.com. So until next week, as we always say, don't do crime.